What's up, everybody? My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition, and you are tuned in to Kinda Neat. Thank you guys again for tuning in. As always, follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition. Follow my man, Ben Shin, behind the boards, making the shit sound buttery at I Am Database, space with two S's. Follow us as a unit at That's Kinda Neat, youtube.com/That's Kinda Neat, where you can see all of our videos in a playlist and just listen to them and do chores or do your homework or, you know, tell your mom to get off your back. You're listening to music. Find everything wrapped up in a pretty package at kindaneat.net. Subscribe. It is very important to subscribe and leave comments and 5-star ratings. It is so helpful and makes me have a warm feeling inside. This week, I'm not going to talk too long during the intro because I just talked an hour and 45 minutes with my best friend and confidant, Dominic Cooley. You guys have heard me mention him probably dozens of times on this podcast. He's the dude that I've traveled all across the country and world sometimes with, shooting photographs and shooting pictures of athletes and models and random fucking people. And I don't know, I'm super proud of where he is in his life right now. So we talk about how he got there, talk about a lot about his kids and just kind of like the ingrained hustle mode that he has. So hopefully you guys will find this inspiring and find it fun. Without any further ado, here is my conversation with Dominic Cooley. I talk about you a lot on this podcast, but I mean, we travel a lot together, and then people like to get a small like glimpse into my real life of what I do beyond when I'm sitting in here or writing emo raps. And yep. So, you know, traveling with you and spending time with you and the kids and the family is like a big part of my life. So I figured it'd be an interesting insight into everything.
Well, yeah, and it was funny too, because like the one thing I kept coming up with is like, this is like my introduction to like podcast Lee, because yeah. Like this is a totally different motherfucker that you got here. It's like when I met you 15 years ago, I like met Lee Shaner, yeah. And then it was like, okay, I got to know Intuition, and then all of a sudden there's like this new motherfucker I've never met. His name's like Podcast Lee, and fucking he's like charming and nice, and he's kissing mad ass to all these fucking people in the music industry, and I'm like, yo, who the fuck is this guy?
Wait, what?
I'm used to the cynical.
Why?
Like,
I don't kiss ass. That's the real life? Nah. I don't. That's how I let you do that shit.
Fuck. When I, like, the first one I ever heard, I was like, oh, God. Who the fuck is this dude?
That's fucked. I didn't realize that. I guess I put on my radio voice.
I'm trying to think of an exact job where, like, fucking Lee Shaner came out in full blast, you know? And then, like, comparison to, like, when you're interviewing somebody else, I'm like, holy shit, you could be that nice? Like, fuck.
So, yeah, well, what you're talking about, of course, is like, I'm your right-hand man on set. You are the photographer when we go shoot, and I do all the other stuff. I like set up the lights and run the computer and then make sure that everything is comfortable for your creativity to fucking come out. And sometimes I've been known to put my foot in my mouth on set and crack some jokes where I'm like, oh, wait, maybe I'm a little too comfortable right now and being a fucking too Lee Shaner.
Nah, man. I mean, yeah, exactly. So on the technical side, that's, you know, exactly what we do. I mean, like I always say, like with our team and like team of dudes that we have, you know, AG to anybody else who fills in with us, to you, I definitely think it's just more of a group effort, you know, from the people we work with who are the clients to the art person in between, then down to us, you know. And like, I'm always like, hey, man, it's not like just me. It's like a fucking big team effort.
Yeah.
Like I was saying with that. Yeah, there's a lot of other shit we lean on for each other where I'm like, hey, man, fucking, I'm kind of clamming up here around this fucking athlete or whoever it is. Like, yo, man, be that asshole.
Right, right. Yeah, well, and that's the thing is sometimes I have to have, like, if, yeah. Sometimes it's like setting the vibe on a set of being a smart ass or like cracking jokes where like, hey, if the photographer said it, maybe it would be some weird shit. But if the assistant said it, it's like, oh, that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like, I can kind of like say the things that you might not be allowed to say.
Yeah, I say that all the time, man. Like to everybody, I'm like, hey, our crew, there's a lot of people that could do photography and probably do it as well, if not better than us, which is definitely the case. But at the same time, like our crew is the shit, man. Everybody comes out, they have like a good time. Like there's usually not a job that we do that someone hasn't been like, we love working with you guys and you are the most fun that we've ever had.
We're like a personality crew.
Exactly. I'm like, you know, you know, like the photography is kind of like 50-50 to like just talking shit, you know?
It's yeah.
Like the photography is free, but the jokes cost you $4,000 a day.
There you go. And I always kind of joke around about like, yeah, I think people like hiring us because we shoot so many athletes and stuff, and like art director crews and like these brands, it's all these white people that are like uncomfortable around black athletes for some reason. And we go in and we're like, hey, what's up, fool? And like, it's just very comfortable. You know what I mean? Like we don't get starstruck because we're not like big like sports fans. It's just like, these are some dudes that we have to like make look cool for the day and fucking try to get some real personality out of them.
I think definitely understanding. I mean, I feel like our crew and us and me, definitely do better a lot, like sometimes working with like a dude, like an athletic, you know, like an athlete or a musician or whatever, because I think it's just, we're real conscious of like what looks cool, you know what I'm saying, to a dude, where you're not going to ask some dude to do some dumb shit. Like, you know, a lot of the times we get like a client or somebody that's like, yo man, make him go yo and throw his hands up, and you're like, man, fuck no.
Yeah,
like I'm not making him do that. And we can kind of all joke about it, plus, you know, it's like each one of us was kind of an athlete in there, you know, at one point or another, whether if it was like, you know, we got AG who was like actually played ball at college, you know, you playing baseball and me just kind of being involved in sports and, and being a fan of sports and things like that. So when we come across dudes like that, and a lot of times, you know, we're in this real artsy fartsy world where these people weren't into sports.
Yeah, a lot of photographers are like unathletic or, you know,
exactly.
What I mean? Like, yeah.
And we're kind of the other. We're definitely the other side of that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
No funny hairdos or nothing like
that. Yeah, well, that's not an option, really. We both went bald around the same time. You know, what a bummer. Yeah, where did the photography thing come from for you?
I mean, truthfully, maybe like subconsciously, like way, 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 way back when, my grandfather was actually he was a photographer in the Navy, and he actually, when he was a kid, or when I was a kid, I used to go down and visit him. At this time, I was probably like 10, and he would always show me like old wartime photos and things like that. And because it was my grandfather, like everything he showed me felt like it was from another world.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, look at these black and white photos of like.
Yeah, how come when you see pictures of your grandparents when they're young, they still look old as fuck? Have you
right?
ever noticed that?
Like, exactly. So I can't even relate to this being 10. And I'm like, whoa, but I knew that he did it. And I knew he had like a lot of photography stuff going on. But like it didn't interest me at all. But it was part of like my life as far as like having a dope album to look at from my grandfather of my parent or my mom. Photography equipment that was just weird random stuff like SX-70 Polaroids and like random little pieces of equipment that actually after he passed away would get handed down to me.
Mm.
But then I think where it really hit was is I have my my uncle, which we call him Uncle Frank. Everybody knows. Shout out to Uncle Frank. That's the first time I got to do that.
Frank the Tank.
But so Frank was like kind of like hobbyist surf photographer, very, very into photography. And he started doing surf photography, and surfing was like something that was like real big for me when I was a kid, just being involved in the ocean, all that kind of stuff. And Uncle Frank's house was like Uncle Frank and Aunt Julie, my aunt.
You're just shouting the whole hood out.
I know, man. I'm saying. I'm trying to think of like who to shout out so no one gets mad at me.
Hey, man, I heard you on the radio. You didn't mention my name.
Yeah, I know, right? No one who I really know knows how to fucking download the podcast app. So I think I'm pretty good.
You're like, wait, do they have the internet in Oceanside?
We're very analog. Everybody's like, yo, you're going to be on FM 97.1?
Because if not, I'm not listening.
Yeah, I don't fuck with that. So anyway,
Frank and Julie.
So their house was like the house when you grow up. That was like the house where all the cousins and everybody, you know, he lived down the street from me with my cousin Adam. He was an only child, and like my Aunt Julie and Uncle Frank's house, that was the hangout house. Like there'd be kids there every weekend, you know, all of our family members, and our aunt and uncle would just spoil us, man. And the kids would play video games and we'd stay up all night and eat, you know, crappy junk food and whatever. And a lot of the kids, man, when they'd be playing video games and stuff, like when I was a kid, I found like my uncle's archive. Like I found like all his slides from like all these like places that he had been as a young man, you know, like he went over to Samoa and lived over there for a while. He was like in and out of Hawaii, like all these like really cool destination surf spots that I had like dreamed of surfing my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just understood I wasn't like not like a good surfer or nothing, but like I'd be like, man, I would like to go and check that out. So as through just looking through all these photos and seeing like
that he took. Yeah.
So he was like the photographer and these trips he had been on. And then just watching the documentation of like I'm flipping through slides and here's a photo of my dad from the 1970s, you know, looking like a straight bell bottomed out Hawaiian shirt looking, you know what I mean? Just real cool, like throwback shit.
Yeah.
And just like the culture that had came up, like, you know, skateboarding to surfing. Like, he was documenting all that and just had a bunch of tight photos of even where we grew up in Oceanside and, you know, the every generation of the pier since he was a kid. You know, like, there was two piers that had fell down. One had fell down. They rebuilt it. Old buildings, all that. And it just really inspired me to where I was like, man, that's really cool. Like, I would like to do that. And so, I got my hands on a camera, man. I took a class when I got to high school.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where the journey had started.
Instantly, you mentioned that you and Adam are only children. And the crazy thing is like, even though you're only children, like, you guys have a giant family. And it seems like both sides of your family with all your cousins and everything raised you guys and raised everybody. It seemed like this big communal effort. And going back to what we were talking about being a personality crew, I think that the way you were brought up in that city with everyone kind of being a huge community has a lot to do with your personality.
Yeah, probably. You know, it probably does, man. No, it definitely does. I mean, the thing is like, yeah, like, I'm an only child, but at the same time, like, I have a ton of cousins. And because my family's like third generation there,
in Oceanside,
you know, everybody knows our family. Everybody knows my good friend's family. Everybody knows these certain families. And it's like, man, you can't really, like, I remember ditching school as a kid and just being like, man, I know somebody that, like, my dad works with, or somebody's going to see me. You know what I mean? So it was like, there was this like village mentality of being raised to where, like, you kind of feared for, like, the elder people that, like, your uncles or your aunts or someone would introduce you to. And it really kept you in line. But at the same time, there was, like, even just keeping you in line and keeping you accountable for, like, what you're doing. At the same time, there was that level of help there, you know, where it was like, whether, no matter what I was into, someone's like, oh, Dom's into playing basketball, like, he's going to try out for the high school team. And then it's like, bam, someone that my uncle knows is, like, taking me under their wing and bringing me to the park with all these other kids and, you know, trying to train me to play basketball and do this or do that. Or, you know, it's like somebody's dad in the neighborhood was like the dad that took us to the beach every day or whatever the case may be. Is like, we had that support.
And I think growing up that way, it seems as though that's carried on to into your adulthood, where, like, you take people under your wing, I feel like. And you, when you talk about Frank's house was the house that, like, people went to chill at and like everybody went and got spoiled, it seems like that's what your house has kind of become lately.
Yeah, I feel like my house, my business, my studio, like, all those things, like, are all just that, you know, we kind of bring each other up and we use each other for any kind of thing. You know, if I have some, like, for instance, I get a lot of kids that always ask me about interning, you know, like, hey, I want to intern from you. I want to work with you. I want to do this. I want to do that. And the crazy thing is like, it's not that I wouldn't like to reach out and help these other people, but that hit me up, or I'm not interested, or they may even be better at a role than somebody I have. But I'm just really into whole giving back, because there's so many people, like, you know, we're talking about how big the family is. And I go back to think about my business or the way anything is. And the crazy thing is like, so many people have helped with so many different aspects of the business. You know, it's like, while I'm building my studio, I have a bunch of homies that do construction, you know, and each one of them knew that I was, like, trying to, like, you know, it's like that if you build it, they will come type shit, you know, where it's like, I told my boys, like, hey, man, I'm about to have this spot. It needs a lot of work. And the next thing I know, you know, I got all my boys over there that are on some straight up burrito, you know, like, hey, man, I'll buy you a burrito, work 10 hours doing construction, you know. And my way of kind of giving back to everybody who helps me, no matter what it is, like, hey, I need a lowrider for this photo shoot. Hey, I need a location. Do you know this person that owns this restaurant? You know, my way of giving back is just when they're, you know, there's these big companies that hire us, like the REIs or the ESPNs or the, you know, Hennessy or whoever it may be, whatever big client we're working for, I bring my boys on as assistants, or I bring somebody in to do the catering, or I bring somebody else in to help with the production, or maybe build us some sets. I always try to go back to the people that have supported, you know, me from when there was no money to pass around or whatever.
Right.
And just use those companies to kind of, like, get jobs that we need done, as well as, like, provide a job for somebody else. So that's, you know,
keep the money in the hood.
Keep the money in the hood. That's our motto, right?
That's the motto. But yeah, so, like, what was it like growing up in Oceanside? Because Oceanside is insane to me, and the first time I went down there, it was crazy.
Yeah, man. I mean,
well, the best summary I've ever heard of Oceanside, I was actually on a bus to Oceanside, I think, like a Greyhound or something. And this old fucking gangster dude was sitting next to me, and he's like, where are you headed? And I said, I'm going down to Oceanside. I was going from Santa Barbara. And he goes, Oceanside? He's like, man, that place is crazy. It's like a bunch of white boys that look like skaters, but they're all gangbangers.
Yeah, man, I think there's a... I mean, yeah, I think if you asked anybody, there's definitely... It's one of those coastal towns. Like, I mean, to compare it to anything on like a mainstream thing, I guess you could look at it like almost like a Venice or something. You know what I mean? Where, yeah, it was when I was coming up as a kid, it was like, I guess you could say lower middle class, like kind of down by the beach. So, I mean, Oceanside, you got to remember too, it's split up into a bunch of different neighborhoods. So, you know, my neighborhood, it was like more middle class type neighborhood, but it's a trip. There's these little pockets kind of in and around the beach. Like, I guess like you would consider like a Venice or something where there's these little alleyway cuts and different little neighborhoods going around. And then, you know, we full on got, you know, Mexican neighborhoods and black neighborhoods and Samoan neighborhoods and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I mean, as a whole, it's more of a middle to lower class type town, with a lot of like cheap property by the beach. And now it's slowly starting to get filled up because people are starting to figure that out. And the neighborhood's kind of cleaning up, you know, in and around that area.
But as a kid, there's places that you probably couldn't go in that town.
Yeah, I think as a kid, you just had to definitely be aware. You know, you were definitely aware. You had like a heightened awareness to like what was going on in and around like your neighborhood or other people's neighborhoods. And the thing is, I think, you know, the kids... when they're young, like I wasn't involved in like gang banging like that or nothing like that, but it was definitely around. And a lot of our friends, you know, most of them were involved in something like that. Or you played sports with some kid, you know, you played sports with some kid and he grew up in a Crip neighborhood and that's your buddy. You know what I mean? You guys played basketball together. So at the same time, I mean, on my end, it was cool to experience it like that because I was able to have friends in all these different neighborhoods and kind of hear the stories of what's going on, plus see it firsthand and know where to be like, okay, you're definitely not welcome here and you need to like tread lightly or whatever.
And it probably also tell you how to get along with a lot of different types of people. Because I think that from the business perspective, that's like your strongest quality that I look up to is the fact that like you can have a conversation with whoever the fuck.
Yeah, I mean... you know what's weird? I think when you tell somebody their strongest quality, you're like, man, I really got to work hard to like be the motherfucker that like, you know, you come in like even today, man, it's like I didn't really know like how we would do this, but the conversation is just flowing like crazy because I'm just
it's dripping like kinda, water,
kind of the shit, you know, I'm like, shit, I should run this podcast. Yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot. OK, bring it back to like the start of photography, man. There's so many fucking lame ass jobs that I had to take to get to the point where I'm at that I think a lot of fucking people, no matter what you're doing or whoever talks to me about coming up in fucking music or, you know, I got somebody that wants to be a fucking chef or this, that, whatever, man, pay your fucking dues and do whatever the fuck it takes to pay your dues. Because the reality is, man, I did so many shitty jobs. I don't even want to tell you most of them of what they would be, but like, caring about photography so much to where it's like, you know, I would say it's the equivalent to you. Like, I'm in some fucked up shitty venue, but I'm going to rock this show because I love music so much and it's my art that I'm not, no matter what the venue is or how many people in there, I'm going to give the same show. So for me, it was the same thing, you know, like let's say I was doing a wedding and, you know, sometimes I did weddings for friends and it was like kind of fun, you know, it was like I'm with some homies, I'm shooting some photos, I'm making some money. That's cool. Sometimes, man, I just took them because I needed some extra cash, you know, and I'm working for some random ass person, some bitchy ass bride. You know, I don't want to be there. We're in like the fucking Holiday Inn in Oceanside and it's some fucked up, like, it's like everything's going against me. It's not a cool fucking location. The bride's being a cunt, like, you know what I'm saying? There's all these different fucking things and I'm hungover, you know, and it's like, damn, I really don't want to be here. But like the pride in me because of like what I liked doing was like, hey, get it together, dude, and like snap the fuck out of it and do what you do.
Right.
You know, so I've always just kept that mentality, man, no matter like what we're doing, whether it's like a big client or a small client or if somebody's being an asshole, like my biggest goal of the day is like, you know, sometimes we come in, this dude's being a prick and I'm like, hey man, our biggest goal of the day isn't the photos today. It's like, if we can get this person to like us,
like, then we're good.
That shit would be good.
Yeah. Right.
I remember, doing that job. We were on a Skullcandy job and, we were shooting Andre Iguodala.
Oh yeah.
And, his manager, who's like kind of, she was like a manager with Kobe and Kevin Durant and all this. And she's like this real good looking, she's like this real good looking lady. She's like tall, athletic kind of deal. And man, it was crazy. Like the first couple times that we had worked with her, we got nowhere. You know what I mean? She was like stepping all over our toes, like telling us what to shoot, talking about 2 minutes left, this and that. And that shit was so funny, man, because like the Lee Shaner I know charm like came on. And fucking this dude just had her busting up, cracking up to where it was like we finally just won her over.
I told her that she looked like an equestrian. She has some tall boots on. I said, "Are you a equestrian?" She said, "What's that?" I said, "You look like you ride horses."
She's like, "You got those good jeans. You come from like a white family, like it's fucking own stables." But anyway, like the athletes start laughing and she starts laughing, and it's like, man, you're always just like one fucking conversation away or like funny line from like just making that cool experience, and then that just breaks down to like relationships.
Well, which goes back to the before the tangent started, being able to talk to whoever. Like, where does that trait come from you? That has to be like from being able to like get through different neighborhoods without fucking, you know, treading too heavily.
Right? Yeah, I mean, I think deep down what it comes from is my dad, and he grew up in Oceanside too. So
yeah, tell me about your folks.
My pops like definitely had to learn how to navigate and talk to people and do that shit. And I saw it my whole life of him just like chopping it up with everybody. But to get back and not go too far off the tangent. Yeah. I mean, I equivalation. That was my fucking E40 slang coming out.
Yeah.
So what I equate is that, you know, dealing with so many people at any different times. I mean, you could be in a fucking burrito spot and all of a sudden it's like a bunch of dudes from another neighborhood are kind of looking at you funny or whatever, and you gotta learn how to navigate through that shit. You can be at a house party with 10 different fucking people, and I kind of equate that shit to big business. I'm like, man, if you can navigate through fucking sticky situations in real life where you could actually get fucked up, you could navigate your way through the corporate world. Like, and that's, you know, when I think about it, I'm like, man, what are you even nervous or worried about today when you're negotiating these deals between like big clients? Like some of our larger clients are retainer deals or something. It's like, hey man, like you're not gonna get your ass kicked, you know what I'm saying? Like you're not gonna walk in somewhere, say the wrong shit, and end up getting your ass kicked. So a lot of those things I just think about all the time. I'm like, man, I navigated through a room with like motherfuckers that straight stomp you out or shoot your ass. Like, shit, coming up here and talking about money and an opportunity, that's a cakewalk.
That's the easy part.
Yeah
So tell me about your folks.
My dad, he's a construction worker, been a huge supporter of like everything I do. Shit, even back, it was before photography when I didn't really know what I was going to do. Probably my best friend, knows a lot of stuff about, you know, just every little thing I got going on. And
he ingrained a lot of like your hard work qualities into you, I'm sure.
Yeah. So, you know, another model as ours is, you know, we're like the blue collar photography crew. I always say we're the fucking photography work release program because we look like a straight bunch of thugs. But yeah, so my dad, you know, as a kid, like, man, it was just ingrained in me, you know, watching my dad, being on the job site with him, you know, like my dad would take me to work since I was like 10 years old. And in the beginning, he was like, oh, ride your bike around the construction site and help pick up some nails. And then it came to like,
because he's like a contractor who can kind of do everything.
Yeah,
right?
Build a house. He could build a house from the ground up. Yeah, he's that type of dude. And he had a lot of projects like that. So he, you know, when I was a kid, like I said, it was more fun around the job site type shit. And then by the time I hit like 13, it was like, oh, summertime? Yeah, you're coming with me.
Pick a shovel up,
you know, doing labor shit. And which was crazy is like, I always admired my dad for what he did, but I never really was like super interested in it, which is crazy because now, you know me, I'm like Mr. fucking project after project.
Yeah, you're like Bob Vila.
Yeah, I'm trying to be like Bob Vila, but I wish I would have learned more during that time period. But during that time, I was like, man, just
everybody wants
work out.
Everybody wants to rebel when they're 13. Like, you don't want to do what your dad's doing. That's not tight.
Yeah, and I looked at it as like, well, he's just gonna pay me to work out all day. I'm gonna lift all this fucking wood. I'm gonna dig this hole. I'm gonna do that. But you know, my dad, there's a bunch of grown men on his job site, and it's not like a fucking corporate environment. So it was like straight up like, hey, you fucking faggot, get your ass over here and pick up this wood and do this and do that. Like, you know, like no one called me by my real name. It was a bunch of like grown motherfuckers that were like straight out the pen sometimes.
Yeah.
So like,
it's probably also a lot of like locker talk where it's like just dudes playing the dozens the whole day and shit, right?
Dudes playing the dozens all day, talking all kinds of shit. But at the same time, like even on my dad's job site, like dudes would fucking come at you like, you got to watch your ass as a young kid. You'll get straight slapped up, you know? Yeah. Like come a little too crazy about a grown up.
Tell the story about showing up late where you had to dig the hole.
Oh, yeah. My dad, he just had like, I'm trying to think, man. I had something else I was going to say. You threw me all off, motherfucker.
Sorry.
But like the blue collar, like just shit that was like ingrained in my head. Like I remember like as a kid, like going to the job site or something and like cutting my hand, mm-hmm. you know, like something that wasn't that bad, but there was like a cut.
Yeah.
And I remember like as an instinct as a kid, you just want to go like, oh shit, I got a cut on my hand.
Yeah.
And I just remember like one day, like my pops that came home and this motherfucker had like a big ass like cut on his hand, or there was like a time even where he like chopped this fucking pinky finger off and like he didn't whine at all. And I just went like in my head, like, well, from this point on, dog, like, like unless you amputate a leg, like, you know, you can't really whine or cry about anything like that.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's like just that blue collar work ethic, like where there's no job that's like too big or too small.
Yeah.
For us, it's like, you know, hey, I pack the bags as well. You know, we carry gear. We fucking are in the trenches working with each other. And, you know, I think our clients see that and people like appreciate like, oh, wow, Lee went over and grabbed the fucking makeup lady shit, you know? And then it's like, AG.
Because I'm trying to mac on the makeup
lady. Yeah, that's, I mean, that's really, yeah. Lee don't got those qualities and shit.
Yeah, my dad didn't
I'm
do any.
I'm trying to rub off
he didn't
on
do, He didn't do any physical like, labor. I didn't learn any of that shit.
Yeah. Lee's like, oh, hey, so what's up, girl? what, you got makeup in there?
yeah, so you grew up on construction sites and shit, and I feel like that work ethic rubbed off on you for sure.
Yeah, and, you know, but then again, you know, so my pops was like real supportive over everything. I mean, I was pretty much such a dumbass in high school that I barely graduated and just had a real hard time with education, you know, like the conventional means, but yeah. Always was like pretty creative and had some other shit going on.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I feel like you're probably my most successful friend. Like you're killing it. You own a house, you have a family, you got a successful business. You're crushing right now. But like you'll fully admit, like you're not a book smart motherfucker.
Nah, man, and
that has really like influenced me in that like I grew up a very book smart motherfucker who was kind of street smart, and then I see somebody who's fully street smart who like doesn't give a shit about book smarts, and like that's really that really like has helped you navigate. I feel like
So this is a doctor therapist dude that works with my oldest son, and that's a whole nother thing. But I talked to him about it quite a bit. It's kind of mind blowing, man. Like. Yeah, okay, to put it straight up, like, man, I think I really stopped learning, like, education-wise, probably about seventh grade, to where, like, I got behind in certain things. My parents really weren't, like, highly educated, nor were they, like, really always up on, like...
They weren't, like, forcing you to do your homework and shit.
I mean, they were, but they weren't. Like, there was just a point, definitely, where, like, it was becoming a little much for them as far as their jobs and what they were comprehending. And it, not even comprehending. It's not like my parents were dumb, but, like, learning how to teach somebody is an art.
Right.
In itself, you know, right. A construction worker trying to teach a fucking kid
geometry
is like different. You know, my
dad's
like, so you take 10 pieces of wood and these nails. I had like nails on the fucking kitchen table. Like, take four away. So this therapist dude, we always talk about it, and I forgot what he calls it, but there's like a definite name. It's not street smarts. Yeah. It's like kind of like almost common sense over
your like social abilities or something. Like,
yeah. So, yeah, I guess. I mean, I guess it's a combination of a lot of things. I think like creative problem solving. As well as like, yeah, social abilities and certain things like that. And, you know, me and you, we've talked a lot about it now that I get older, because I really wonder, man, it's like I went to school with all these like crazy talented kids and really smart kids, whether they were smart and athletic or smart and, you know, artsy or whatever. I mean, I was probably like, you lined up 100 fucking kids at my school and be like, hey, which one's going to have a successful business, this, that, whatever. Like, no one would have fucking chose me. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it would have been a bad gamble at that point.
Right.
I was never really a dummy. Like, I found ways to, like, navigate through and, like, get what I needed done, whether if it was, like, fucking copying from somebody or charming a fucking teacher, you know, like, those types of skills, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I could charm my way into getting a fucking B.
Right.
You know, from a female teacher or some shit.
Well, and that's that shit that I'm talking about, that, like, people don't put enough stress on that, I feel like. Like, if you... In hindsight, I feel like it probably was a safe bet to think that you would be a successful business person, having heard a lot of your life story in the past. Like, the little things like – and this is something that my brother did too that you guys share in common, and he's also a successful – he's doing really well as well. Like, you guys both would make money off of throwing parties in high school.
Yeah, I'd make money off of all kinds
like
of
hustles.
Shit.
You know what I mean? Like you, that's the thing is like, okay, hey, I might not give a shit about homework, but I got these hustles and I'm making this paper. You know what I mean?
I think at the time I didn't really think about it like,
exactly.
I got this hustle and I'm going to do this. Like I enjoyed doing certain things and, you know, one of them's always been like bringing people together and having a good time. You know, that's always been, so basically it goes back to like in opportune moments. Like I saw things where I'm like, huh. Okay, I got this opportunity right now, and I don't know if I thought about it that hard, but when I was, like, in high school, right, and people are throwing fucking keg parties, this and that, there was this biker dude that lived down the street, and he had some kind of, like, little hookup with, like, Anheuser-Busch, right?
Mm-hmm.
One day I was down there chilling. He, like, really liked me, kind of took me under his wing, was this cool dude, you know, and I used to go down there and chill out and talk shit with him and all this and that. And he's like, hey, you know, the Anheuser-Busch truck fucking comes pulling up to his house, and this dude's like, oh, come get whatever you want. And I'm like, holy
shit. It's just pulled by those big fucking horses in the commercials.
Yeah, right. That's how it was. They're shitting everywhere with big ass dicks.
You got a lot of dick jokes in this podcast.
I'm saying very visual, dog.
So
that's how you're wearing tight ass shorts sitting right across from you. I'm like, kick back.
The Anheuser-Busch truck pulls up and
so this like it's like a full-on grocery truck type thing and yeah. This dude like brings like goes walking right in there and is like, oh, you know, grab whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
And so this dude had some kind of like little connect, you know, where he just did that almost every Friday.
He's like, oh, it just fell off the truck type
kind
of thing.
Yeah, that type yeah. of shit. And I was like, yo man, what's up with me getting a little piece of that, you know?
Yeah.
And the dude was like, oh yeah man, like throw my buddy like $25 for any keg you want and fucking you could take it.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? $25? Like, you know, as a kid, I'm thinking, fuck, man, if I was going to throw a party, that shit would be like $200 in beer. Like, I could grab enough beer to party for the whole year.
Yeah.
You know, so this is shit that I feel like other parents would be frowning on, but it was like, you know, I basically came home with like four kegs of beer for like a fucking $100.
Yeah.
And I had a couple like big Samoan homies and I said, man, you guys work the door
yeah.
and I'm gonna throw this big ass cracking party. And my parents were like cool with it. And at the time, I think like my parents were probably getting frowned on like, man, you're fucking crazy letting your kid do this. But at the same time, you know, I'd chip some homies off that were working the front door plus put fucking like a G in my pocket as like a high school kid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I remember hearing like other people's parents talking mad shit about that or this or that or whatever. And then it got to a point where it got too crazy and at my house. My parents were like, man, whatever. So kids were literally coming up to me being like, dude, my parents are going out of town for the week. You think you could just like produce that? You know, they didn't say that, but now yeah. I look back on it.
You're like, oh, I was being a production manager.
I'm just producing something, yeah. you know what I mean? Like yeah. you have what the goods that people want, you put it all together and you fucking do it for
yeah.
a dollar amount, you know, and no one cares because they just want to throw a party.
And that shit where like in hindsight, you don't realize it at the time what you're doing, but when you look back, you're like, oh yeah, wait, I was like on some smart shit.
Yeah, now that I think about it, I'm like, wow, that was like a crazy little hustle and I didn't even see it like that. It was just like an opportunity to do something and to put some money in my
yeah.
pocket. And
well, because I just I always think about that shit. Like, you and my brother are the two dudes that I know that are the best with money. Like, you guys have been able to, like, save it and put it into use and buy houses and shit. And most of my friends are completely irresponsible pieces of shit. But I love you guys. And the common theme that you two had was, like, the high school party thing. Because where you would have kegs and have people watching the door and it just essentially turned the house into a fucking club, you know? Like, he was turning the house into a casino. And he would invite people over and say, look, I'm going to deal blackjack and I'm the house and you guys can all pitch in. It's $2 games or whatever. And he would make a G playing just being the house in fucking blackjack. And I find those things to be so similar and interesting about you guys, because he was another one who like he stopped giving a shit about school after a while, too, but still found his like his way.
I mean, the other part of that story that's a trip now is, you know, I get like people that see what I'm doing like via social media or hear from friends or whatever and like, damn, Dom's working with this person, or, you know, they'll keep up with my social media and, you know, I keep it pretty real on my social media. I just show what's going on in my life, whether mm-hmm. it's my kids, wife, me, my work, the homies, whatever. I pretty much keep it pretty true. So people get to like watch my life almost like some reality TV, like any other thing. But it's a trip now. The people that reach out to me are like people that would never even spoke to me when I was in high school,
mm-hmm.
you know, like there's this dude that, I've had people that are doctor. I mean, my neighbor's a fucking doctor now. So it's like, it's just really weird to like rub elbows with people like that. And, But it is weird because of my appearance and because of what I do, and it's so oddball. Like, at the same time, I get people hitting me up. Some people just curious. Some people don't understand what I do at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just interesting.
My favorite is like when you post pictures of like maybe women that we photographed, and like some salty wife will be like, "Oh, that seems fun," or like you just like this kind of sarcastic eye roll, like, "Oh, I wish that was my job," and like job in quotation marks or something. Like, fuck you,
dude. There's so many fucking weird dynamics that have popped up either from like being successful. Or right. Just being right, put in these
DJ Khaled, you're over here suffering from success.
Did I do that?
No, just kidding.
DJ Khaled. Oh shit. No, but it's a trip, man. Because I never really thought like things would change with certain people, or people would treat you a certain way, or this or that. And I'm not saying it's bad. It's just you know, it's a trip. Like, even living in the neighborhood I live in, it's so funny. Like, I remember when we first moved in, like, I'm thinking, man, all my neighbors must think I sell dope or some shit. You know, it's like, I'm there with a bunch of people that are probably 10 years older than me, all like successful, like type, you know, doctors or very, you know, like their life is totally different.
Yeah,
from
squares.
Mine. Very squares. Yeah. So I'm in the square ass neighborhood.
Yeah.
And
except shout out to John, though.
Yeah, John.
He's not a square.
Yeah, shout out to everybody in the neighborhood, really, except for all the fucking lames. That don't even make no sense. But not like, so, you know, we'd come up on some like neighborhood thing, you know, it's like, I got my three kids and whatever, and people would always be like, "Hey man, what's up?" You know, and first thing, it's like in the fucking burbs, they ask you, "What do you do?" It's like asking you, like, "What set are you from?"
Yeah.
And you're like, "Oh, I'm a photographer." And then instantaneously it'd be like, "Oh, what does your wife do?"
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Oh, she stays home."
They're like, "What?"
And it's like,
Yeah.
Like a trust fund kid or something, which couldn't be further from the truth.
Well, yeah, particularly with the democratization, that's a big word for you to learn today, the democratization of photography, how it's become so easy to become a quote-unquote photographer with the dawn of Instagram. You got these motherfuckers that have 100,000 Twitter followers where all they do is shoot the same fucking 10 chicks in lingerie all the time, you know what I mean? And, like, that's a photographer. You know, to actually make a living off of it seems like – it's, like, very rare, I feel like.
I feel like it's – very rare. And at the same time, man, like, there's other people that I admire their photography like a motherfucker, and they're really not doing it that same way. Like, I've always just kept it really grounded that, like, fucking, it is a business. And there's so many, don't get me wrong, man, like, I'm just not the fucking cool guy. Like, go to my Instagram, I don't even got fucking 3,000 followers, but it's like, you know, you want to talk them Instagram numbers, like, we could talk other numbers too,
right.
But at the same time, I'm kind of like, I'm not
if I get likes, I get checks.
There you go. I'm on that Diddy shit.
Yeah.
Like, he wrote shitty raps. I'll be taking some shitty photos sometimes where they be paying, you know? But yeah, I don't know. I've always been more or less after that money because I got three kids, man, and a wife at home. And, you know, I want to give them like a certain quality of life. Like, people, like, this is number one thing. It's like, man, you must love your job. You get to do what you do every day. It's like, you get to do what you love. I'm like, nah, fool, I love getting head. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't fucking love, like, I love photography.
The one thing that when I know that it's a Dom Cooley photo shoot is when he ends up laying belly down in some fucking pile of mud to get a low angle shot. I'm like, okay, cool. It's like, we got the shot now. I know it.
Yeah, I'm like, downtown LA.
Yeah, that's the whole thing is like, we're workhorses. Every shoot that we do, you work really fucking hard. You know what I mean? And it's like, we shoot all fucking day and we shoot probably 4,000 to 6,000 shots every shoot. And that's like workhorse shit. That's what we do, and that's what it takes to like make it as a photographer. I feel like if you're doing lifestyle stuff.
Well, and you even know, man. You'll hear me calling weeks before, like, I'm nervous about the bid, Lee. I don't know if they're gonna take it, man. Like, we bidded this job all crazy, and we got like, you know, this, that, and whatever. And I know they're trying to see three other bids, and I wonder if we're gonna win. And then all of a sudden, we get it, and now it's like the pressure. I mean, the chances you got to take to even be able to have work at that level is like, are you willing, you know, we went on like a big ass trip for a new era cap company, and you know, we're on the East Coast for 3 weeks and then back out on the West Coast for a week shooting all the biggest name baseball players in the MLB. And you know what's so crazy is like, man, it's such a blessing to have a job like that, but then you got to go and literally it's on me now. You know, so it's like, okay, well, we need flights. Like, okay, so even just in flights, we probably got 10 grand out, you know? So then I got to go get, you know, credit cards that could support this. You know, by the end of this trip, I got $40,000+ of my own money out before we even see it a dime.
Right, before it gets recouped.
So, I mean, I think just being able to be a risk taker like that and, you know, even just have the support to even do something like that is crazy, you know? And then there's like, you know, there's the anxiety and worries about just having that money out. Plus, now you got to think of the creative, and then we have to be ourselves on set.
Mm.
I can't be out there showing that I'm a nervous wreck because I got $40,000 on my credit card. It's like,
mm-hmm.
we got to sit back and do our thing and act like there's no money on it,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so then there's that part of the business. There's even the handing over and the post-production of the images and things like that. And even just chasing your money down sometimes, you mm-hmm. know, like, there's so many different things where a lot of people are like, oh, it'd be fun just to be a photographer all the time, which kind of brings me back to like the whole thing I was saying earlier where you get to do what you love. Like, yeah, true, I get to do what I love, but there's a lot of other parts to that.
Yeah.
And it's like, man.
The actual doing what you love part is only maybe a 6-hour part of the whole thing. And you've right. got 3 other weeks of preparation where you're right. doing shit like everybody else has to do.
Yeah. If someone wants to talk about doing what I love, it's like, well, then just pay me to hang out on the beach and surf with my kids. Like, yeah. that's really what I love.
Yeah.
So we basically the hard work just goes into like giving them a good life yeah. and being able to like the more time, like I see like the more successful you are, to me, it doesn't really have shit to do with money. It's like, how many days can I pick my kids up from school
mm-hmm.
and how many days can I be there to do something with them or take them to show them something fly or
yeah.
be doing some tight shit with my wife? You know, how long can I keep my wife you know, staying at home and taking care of our kids and working for our business,
mm-hmm.
you know? I mean, that's a big goal to have, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like, it's a lot of pressure.
Let's talk about, you fall in love with photography when you're in high school. Did you have somebody that took you under your wing, like a teacher or something that saw your potential?
Funny story, dude. So I got into photography, right? And there was this photo class. And the teacher's name, crazy as fuck, was Mr. Brooks, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's crazy because we went to Brooks Institute of Photography.
Right. So check this out. This is how fucking dumb I was, I guess, at that point. So what happens on the Brooks Institute thing is, like, I'm in this dude's class for about a year. And I was, like, the only one that took it seriously. It was, like, a bunch of AP kids that, like, you know, just moonlighted in the class. And there was, like, a couple people that took it seriously. So he found out I liked it. He's like, man, you should TA for me. And then you should take it as another elective. So I actually had, at one point, like, three photo classes in a row, whereas like I do the chemistry, I do this darkroom days, all that shit.
Yeah. So, you were already getting your chops up and your fucking 10,000 hours in high school.
Yeah. I was getting my 10,000 yeah. hours at that point, you know, like just doing it a lot. And on his wall, check this shit out. There was a poster for the Brooks Institute.
Yeah.
And I always thought it was funny because I thought he made the poster and that's what he called his photo class. And so I'm like, what the fuck? I was like, oh, the Brooks Institute. And then yeah. like one day, some kid that was in the class came from the Brooks Institute to talk about going to photography college. And at that point, I didn't even know you could go to fucking photo school. You know yeah. what I mean?
I was in that same boat. I didn't know that photo schools existed until I moved to California and like saw an ad for that place.
Yeah. And then he was talking about the Brooks Institute. I was like, oh, dude, I thought that's what you called your class as a joke. Like, I didn't know there was the actual Brooks Institute.
Right.
And at that time, still, it seemed so unreachable because that kid I knew, he was kind of a square and mm-hmm. was like a good student, mm-hmm. you know, typical, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, college is college, man. I can't get into that kind of shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that's definitely not for me.
Right.
And, you know, I did the junior college thing while I was working construction and bounced around at junior college. And then I went to Hawaii just, you know, I wanted to travel, wanted to be like my uncle, see his things.
Mm-hmm. Like what, when you were a senior?
No, like right after my senior year, I worked the whole summer doing construction with my mm-hmm. dad, saved mm-hmm. up every penny I had. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go to Hawaii until this money runs out. And mm-hmm. I have a good family friends, like one of my dad's better friends there, you know, my Uncle Ray.
I like how he's just a better friend, not a best friend.
Oh, he's a better friend?
You're like, what of his better friends?
Yeah, he's one of the better friends. So anyway, man, he told me always like, hey, dude, you always got a place to stay. And he was right above the North Shore. And
yeah.
I got to go out there and stay out there with him. And I actually did that 2 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came back the second time, it was just kind of a bummer because I had shot like hundreds of rolls of film and nothing was really that good. Mm-hmm. And I just kept thinking to myself, like, fuck, man, I'm like, what's going on in my head? Like what I'm seeing in my head is not coming. It's not translating
yeah.
to photography. So actually before I had left Hawaii that time, I was dating this girl who is my wife now,
yeah.
Kristen. And
shout out to Kristen.
Oh, damn.
We're shouting everybody.
Shout out wifey.
Shout out wifey.
So then at the time, she's like, yo, what are you doing? Like, we're dating, but you're over here and fucking this is kind of crazy. And like, what are you doing with your life? And truthfully, man, I was shooting photos and just partying, like getting fucked up every day.
Yeah.
Just enjoying Hawaii, but not really,
and
you know.
Knowing Kristen, I bet that at that point when she was like 18, she was like already ready for family. Like she was like, hey, look, if you're going to be my husband, you need to like figure your shit out.
Dude, I think it was on some shit like that where she definitely like was seeing a bigger picture for me, you know. And it wasn't because of talent or anything. Yeah. Like I wasn't fucking more talented. I think I was just passionate and she saw that.
I think she like green eyes at probably.
I'm saying, though, I mean, you know, you'll see a picture of me later and shit. You're going to blame her for that. That's that Lee Shaner rubbing off on me right there.
So she told you, she's like, what are you doing in Hawaii? Like, come back or what?
Yeah, she basically, nah, dude, check this shit out. Mm-hmm. Like, check this out, fellas, especially this young ass audience out here. When you know you got some wifey material shit, it ain't about that photo on Instagram. So she basically told me, hey, check it out. You know how you always wanted to go to photography college? You said if you could do anything, it'd be become a photographer. And she's like, I called Brooks Institute. I got you an interview and I talked to your parents about trying to help you out, like financially get there, because it's like, you know,
it's expensive.
It's expensive. And I just never thought in a million years I could ever do it. And she's like, look, if you come home, that's all here waiting for you. Yeah. You know what I mean?
So, plus, that ass is waiting too.
That shit was waiting too. So anyway, I was just real shocked, dude. And I just thought, man, like this is
fucking
tight.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's crazy. I didn't realize that she did that.
Yeah, she did that for me. So I got to come. I came home.
She saw them three kids in a fucking big backyard, dude, with a pool in the future. Saying, that's what that was.
She saw that. She saw potential.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah. So anyway, she came. I came home and I got the interview and all that shit. And man, my parents were like so fucking tripped out on like me. Like I'm pretty much like at that point the only person in my family that had like gone to college,
yeah,
or was on his way to go into college. So I come back, you know, I get accepted, which is basically if you got a fucking checkbook, you're accepted.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
It's not like
we didn't know that at the time. Yeah, when you first get into Brooks Institute, or at least at this time, what 14 years ago, it seemed like you had made a big accomplishment. But then come to find out, they had just gotten bought out by like the DeVry Institute or something. So like it was like if you got the money, you're gonna keep getting passed.
Yeah,
but we didn't treat it that way though.
No, we're like, oh, I'm gonna show them my portfolio. Yeah. They didn't give a fuck. They were like, show me that check.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
That was it.
Yeah,
but at the same time, man, it was a great place, and I. You know, me and my chick actually went up there, you know, my wife, Kristen, and we went up there and we checked it all out. And I was like, yeah, this is someplace I want to be. But, you know, it was kind of tough adjusting to being up in Santa Barbara, which sounds crazy because it's beautiful.
Yeah.
But, you know, for a motherfucking hometown dude like me, it was like nothing was there for me.
You could take the kid out of the hood, but couldn't take the hood out of the kid.
I'm saying. So, you know, me and intuition got together.
And- yeah. No, well, so I was going to say, we met in the first week of school. So we met in 2000, 14 years ago, or maybe 2001, I can't remember. But it was like, we met a long fucking time ago. And it was in the first week, and there was a kid named Kamal, shout out Kamal, who was like, oh, Lee, you should meet this dude, Dom. You guys remind me of each other. And I said something like, oh, you must be out here getting that pussy too or something retarded, you know what I mean? Like just so stupid. And I feel like I gave you a demo, like, because I was already trying to be on my rap shit. I'm like, oh yeah, I rap, check this out. Like I was on some straight douchebag shit, but for some reason we clicked up and we got along well.
Yeah, that man, you know what, you were like real confrontational, I think, when I first met you. Not like confrontational like on some fight shit, but
yeah,
I think you were talking about music and I was trying to talk about some music, and
you were talking
that time,
about West Coast gangster rap,
that
and
was
I,
it
and I was very much on some like, I hate gangster rap, I'm a backpacker.
Yeah,
like,
you were one step away from having dreadlocks.
Yeah, for real. I really was, back when I could still grow that hair.
That would have been a fucking accomplishment.
Yeah, no, it's funny because I remember the first time that we actually kicked it outside of the photo lab. Do you remember? We had to do a portrait assignment in 101. In the first class, and I hit you up and I said, yo man, not to be on some like weird gay shit, but do you mind if I photograph you for this window light assignment? And you're like, yo, not to be on some weird gay shit, but I need to photograph you for it too.
Yeah. Dude, I still have
I didn't know what the politics were. My grandmother has them hanging up at her house. I didn't know what the politics was of like shooting homies at the time, but then it turns out like when you're in photo school, you have to shoot your homies all the fucking time.
Well, I think you got to just reach out to whoever, you know what I mean? And it becomes not weird. As a photo kid, you're like, oh, hey, chick in my class, like, yeah. I need to shoot you. Hey, homie, I need to shoot you.
Exactly.
And like,
That was our first time. Like, you were one of the first, like, people that I sat down to shoot with the intent of, like, you are going to, like, model for this picture for me. Like, I'd never done that before. I just shot people randomly, you know?
Yeah, I think I was on the same thing. Like, I never really, like, propositioned somebody.
Yeah, like, pulled somebody aside and been like, hey, man, can I photograph you? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, anyways.
Yeah, so...
living in Santa Barbara, we got through photo school, and there's a lot of wild times.
Yeah, most definitely, man. And the... trying to think. Yeah, you said like sitting your homies down and all that kind of shit. So like fast forward all the way to like the end of like photo college. And it's like up until this point, I feel like all we learned was this technical information. And like dudes like Lee, you got to understand, man, like this dude is so fucking talented when it comes to like creativity and the camera and all this shit. Like it's a trip now that we even work together. But at the same fucking time, it was like, man, I was like a real admirer of him and all these kids that we were coming up with because – you know, a dude like Lee, he came in, I think you already had your bachelor's or whatever.
No.
Associates?
No, I didn't have shit. I mean, I had a couple of years of college experience, but I was bouncing around too.
But you were taking general eds?
Oh, no. I had already gotten most of my general eds out of the way from my first 2 years of college.
Yeah, so at this point in time, like, you know, when I first enroll, it's like all these other kids, like, were all, most of them I would assume were decent students.
Yeah.
You know, and so like... while I'm sitting there struggling to get through general ed, like I'm sitting there like getting tutored every fucking day. Like
I do remember
I was
that.
A straight idiot. Like I'm trying to like I'm trying to like relearn shit I should have learned in junior high.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I was like the fucking football player that just happened to get a scholarship but needs all the help in the world. So 90% of my effort was going into my general ed. So I couldn't even really flex on photo shit to where it was like, I'm so amazed because everybody else has much more hours of the day to just focus on creativity and art and all this. And I'm watching Lee, like, man, some of my first work that I did for DC Shoes, which was one of the companies that gave me my first shot, was just reminiscent of like what I used to watch Lee do in photo school. And like, man, he just had all these like super like nobody I feel like at that time that I knew was doing anything conceptual. Like everybody was like you said, like taking pictures of people or taking pictures of beautiful girls, you know, like the easy shit, like sunset, beautiful girls,
right,
this, that, whatever. And then like I'm watching you like take people that necessarily may not even have been good looking or generally super photogenic
or whatever.
Yeah. And Lee's like, I'm gonna put you in this role, like, you know, for instance, like
I used to try to do like big sets, kind of like I used to try to make I think that I used to call it like satirical comic photography or something. Like I used to try to make like a joke with one frame or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't do, to me, like a lot of, like, he did this photo of me, this dude
Lance
and this other guy Alex, and it was just this real cool thing where he like casted me and Lance as kind of like these like dirtbag Guido-ish looking motherfuckers,
like,
and like
thug mobster type dudes.
Yeah, and we were like dressed up in these corny ass jackets and shit, and like I'm holding a roll of duct tape and Lance is smoking a cigarette, and then like in between us you could see Alex like duct taped to a chair, you know? Yeah. So it was like this super conceptual shit. And the crazy shit is like the lighting, the mood, the clothing, like he had thought of so many different things that like I was mad inspired by it. Like, damn, he's controlling everything, and he's casting not the prettiest girl in school or the best looking dude. It was like
people that fit the role.
Because
you were like the big scary dude, and then Lance was like this little, like he looked like a little Russian like fucking mastermind or something, you feel me? And Alex just looked like a dude that would get duct taped.
Oh shit, he's gonna be bummed.
That's one of the things too, is like the first time I met Kristen, when she came up off like a bottle of wine that we had at dinner or something. She's like, we're all sitting at my crib afterwards. She's like, I just want to thank you so much. Like, you've been such a help to Dom, like helping him get through these classes and shit. And it was just funny because, like, I mean, I always felt like we just had a good time kicking it. And then learning extra photo shit off of each other was just an extra benefit. You know what I mean? It was whatever. Because the other thing about photography is it's the most mathematical art. There's so much math, particularly at the time back then when we were having to process film and stuff. Like, you have to think about chemicals and ratios and times, and exposures are all numbers. And so it's like, you know, you shoot a lot off of instinct now, but back then it had to be super teched out. And I feel like, yeah, there were times where like it was confusing.
Yeah, it was mad technical. And I think that's what most people don't understand, I think, is like, I think the first year was technical for most people.
Yeah.
But for like the first 2 years, it was for me, because I feel like I'm catching up on academics, plus I'm trying to catch up on the shit that's not even really sticking, you know, photographically. Yeah. And it was like real hard for me. And I remember it just got to this last class, you know, it was like the people class. I remember watching everybody go through it, and you had an option. Like, that was like the hardest class you could take. It was like the most criticized and creative and all this shit. And all the top dogs like always took it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then, but you had another option where you could take some other class and kind of like skeet around it.
Yep.
And this teacher that was teaching it, he didn't like me already because I had a class with him before. And I ended up fucking off and like did terrible work. And I knew he didn't think I was that talented and blah, blah, blah. And it was like, there was this class, right? And so everybody's sitting there and we had to do a sunglass ad and we're sitting in this class. And I just remember listening to all these like kids, because we went to school with like a lot of fucking rich kids and, mm-hmm. you know, people that had money, you know what I mean? And like, I'm always trying to scrounge together like cheap shit, bum up some shit to like make something happen. And I remember like, you know, a lot of the work that you did that was inspired, that wasn't like, you didn't need a yacht, you know what I'm saying? You didn't need a fucking foreign car or some fine ass.
I used your Volvo in more than one shoot. Yeah.
See, there we go. Yeah. It was a bummy ass car.
There you go.
So anyway, I remember hearing all these kids and they're all talking about what they're going to do. Like, I'm going to go buy these fucking Versace shades and I'm going to put them on the credit card, and then I'm going to rent this yacht for an hour, and I'm going to get this blonde girl. You know what I mean? It just sounded like exactly like what anybody would think of right at that moment in time. And like, I was so fucking nervous because I'm like, dude, I can't afford to buy fucking shades and all this shit. I'm like, the fuck am I gonna do? And I'm just like, damn, I'm way out of my league. I should have never took this class, you know? And I went home, and on my way home, I'm driving from Santa Barbara to SD back to Oceanside, and I just was like, just got in this mood where I'm like, man, I'm just gonna clown, dude. I'm gonna do something totally opposite, like something that like probably will piss the teacher off. And my dad, he's like, you guys will see later, I look very fucking white, and I am pretty much white, but my dad's a Mexican dude. And
who talks like Tommy Chong. Shout out to fucking Tim
Big
Cooley.
Tim. So then I'm thinking, okay, well, you know what I'm gonna do? Like, I'm gonna go home, I'm gonna have my dad fucking shave his mustache into this crazy ass cholo mustache, and I'm gonna stop by the indoor swap meet, and I'm gonna get a fucking hairnet and some three flowers and shit, and I'm gonna have them slick as shit back.
And a pair of Lokes.
I'm gonna use these Lokes. I'm gonna advertise Lokes, right? And so I took the photo, all that shit, and was like kind of nervous about it, and I blew it up like 11 by 14 or something. And we used to have these like critique racks where it was like,
and it's like a very beautiful, like black and white, sharp, tack sharp print of your dad.
Yeah, it's a dope ass photo. Yeah. It was lit cool, but it fit the role of like what we were doing, like lighting wise, like lens aesthetic, everything. Even the background, I had this like brick wall, so it looked like he was in the pin or I don't know, something like that.
Yeah.
And I took the photo, came back up, printed it, and I got into class, and it's like literally every photo was like blonde girl with fucking sunglasses, blonde girl, fucking, you know, it's just like everything you would think out of like a fashion magazine or something.
Right.
And I fucking slapped this photo of my dad up, boom. And I just remember like the fucking screech of the record, you know what I mean? And like everybody, I could hear people talking shit under their breath, and then I could hear, but it was like definitely the topic of conversation. And the teacher walks in, the class hadn't even like fully settled, and he fucking grabs it and he's like, whose is this? And I'm thinking, all right, this is where he fucking just hates me for the rest of the year. And he's like, yo, this is fucking amazing. He's like, this is probably by far like one of my favorite pieces I've ever seen in this class, and just goes into this fucking like 40-minute lecture.
Yeah.
Like, first he's like really fucking like, who the fuck is this?
Right.
You know, and I'm like, oh, it's my pops, you know, and like then that even, you know, started more questions like, hold up, man, you look like a white kid. And what's up with this? And, you know, we went in all, and I think he got to know me a little bit better and kind of understand like what was up.
Yeah.
And he just, you know, I spent $7 on that assignment where some kids that spend like $2,000 or whatever.
Right.
And he just went into this huge lecture about like, if you just play your part and you do what you know and you document what you know, and you, it doesn't always have to cost a lot of money to be good. And that really just started my whole style. He sat me down after the class and was like, hey man, you obviously live a different life than most, than, you know, I'd say 90% of these kids that are here. You're the community that you're involved with, just document it.
Yeah.
Document that the way you know how to do it and just get involved with this. And that whole class, that's all I did. I ended up getting an A in there. And I feel like that class really started my style to where it's like,
where you
started
just
simplifying.
Yeah. You start to learn like who you are as an artist, and you find your voice by being yourself. And that's important in any art form, cross platform. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So that was that was like a real turning point, I felt like, for my photography. But I feel like that didn't get to blossom for years later.
Yeah.
Because I started doing other jobs to pay dues.
Right. So let's talk about right as we're about to graduate, something happens with you and your girl. What happens?
Yeah, my girl gets pregnant, man.
Yeah, we're 23. We're 22 probably when we found out.
Yeah, my son, he was born, what day was he born? Oh, man, that's terrible. My dad's the 12th. Yeah. My son is the 19th, and I'm the 15th of May.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like 4 days after I turned 23, my son was born.
Your son, Nolan.
My son, Nolan.
Who's now 10.
He's 10 now, yeah.
So crazy.
So,
And you're just getting out of school, and it's like, now it's go time, and you got to figure it out.
Yeah, I'm still in school, actually, man. So,
because you're in your last session.
I'm in my last session, and I'm rooming with Dirty Sanchez and, you know, all that. Shout out to Dirty Sanchez.
We'll do
so,
that.
I'm basically coming home every weekend at this point now because my girl is pregnant, about to pop. I'm coming home every weekend. So I'm working at the school. Like, I just got all kinds of shit going on and that class that I was telling you about. And so, like, I just started feeling the pressure, man. And my girl, like, you know, she needed time. She was working at the time, but she's like, look, I got a little bit of money and, like, I'm not going back to work for a while. Like, you got to make this happen. And so I started just feeling all that pressure, man. And, ended up graduating and came home. It's like I came home to a wife and a kid at 23, you know, and at the time, you know, it just was like a huge shock. Man, I panicked, really, is like kind of what happened because I needed money just right off the bat. So, man, I asked my cousin, dude, who really did me a big favor, and I totally fucked him over on everything. But I asked him, I was like, hey, man, like he was like a manager at Albertsons. Like, yo, fucking give me a job, bro.
Yeah.
And I'm like, kind of like at this point, like, fuck, I'll do anything. So I'm like, I'll stock shelves that night.
Yeah,
man. So this dude, I go through this crazy ass fucking process, which is crazy to even have a process at Albertsons as crazy as this. It was to, like a long to fucking be a piss test, to be a stalker, whatever. Yeah. To be a fucking stalker, man. You're basically a fucking stalker.
Yeah.
And it was like, I go into this fucking job the first night I got hired. And dude, it like is nothing but a bunch of fucking tweakers and weirdos like working this night shift. You know what I'm saying? And I'm sitting there like, what the fuck? I got an $80,000 education.
Yeah.
I like have all this information about photography and I'm ready to fucking do it. And I'm sitting here stocking shelves at Albertsons.
Yeah.
Man, and it fucking flipped my life upside down. But at the time, my girl would have been able to work during the day and then I would have left and went to stock shelves at Albertsons. And man, I just fucking grabbed my nuts and I told my girl when I came home, I said, yo, I quit.
Yeah.
And she's like, yo, it's like the first night. Like, what the fuck are we going to do? And like, man, you know, to be like straight up honest, I fucking was like, you know what? I'm going to take this little bit of money that I got and I'm going to buy some weed. So then started that career.
Yeah.
It's funny. Lee's talking all this like technical data shit about like fucking how technical photography is. And it was like, man, I was mad successful at growing weed and shit because it was like,
oh, you turned into a scientist.
Oh, I did, dude. And it was like, yeah, I was. And this just kind of goes into the adult hustle thing where it's like, you know, my pops had a very...
You gotta find any way to get by, really.
Yeah, my pops at a very young age had like sat me down and just told me straight up like, hey, dude, you got a kid now and like get your money any way you know how to get it and any way you can get it because he needs fucking diapers and you got to support him and do what you can do. And, you know, at that point I was like, yo, I'm going to go after my photography, but the only way I can do that is if I got some fucking income coming in and I'm versatile enough to move. So it'd be like... You know, I go out and I pick up a fucking pound of weed, you know, and I started going to work doing that. I had, you know, little business coming in where I can make, you know, like a G a week coming through, and which supported shit from my family, which in turn got me to where I could go take these gigs.
Yeah.
You know,
because on some outlier shit, like a perfect opportunity for you was living in Oceanside. You're kind of at the epicenter of where the action sports industry is.
Yeah, correct. Right?
So, you know, Carlsbad, San Clemente, like all
Vista,
all these areas, they're home to some of the biggest like action sports companies.
Yeah, like I think Vista, I mean, you know, the owners of DC Shoes and all that, who gave me my first job, they're born and raised there. So it's like Vista, you know, DC Shoes was born and raised, drawers, all that was born and raised in Vista.
So while you're making your side money doing what you were doing, we don't promote that on here, but that's no, I'm just kidding. Kids, stay away from the drugs. No, I'm kidding.
Slide the bongo.
Come to my shows and don't do drugs so your parents will let you spend money. Nah, but you're doing that, but then you had a family friend who kind of like got, who like brought you into the industry. You got to shoot some ESPN stuff while you were still in school, and then that kind of blossomed into other opportunities.
Yeah, so Marcus Paulson, man, is like literally the first dude that.
Are we
going to
shout him out? Are we going
to
shout him?
Shout out to Marcus Paulson. What up, dude? Yeah, so Marcus, man, at a real young age was like a family friend, and he basically shout out to my Uncle Bobo, who introduced me to Marcus. And he just was like, hey, man, you went to Brooks. Wow, that's great. Like, you know all this shit. And at the time, he was like an art director / photographer for like an agency who represented action sports personalities. Yeah, I'm talking like Rob Dyrdek, Travis Pastrana, like a lot of, you know, people you hear nowadays.
Yeah.
Back before they were...
Sean White and shit like that?
Yeah, yeah. People like that. Yeah. And before they were...
famous, like huge household names.
I mean,
names.
I guess they were famous in like the industry that we were in, but yeah,
but those
they
guys have
like,
transcended to where they're like... Like my mom knows who all those people
exactly,
are.
Exactly, right?
Know? Yeah.
So at the time, he was shooting some of the photos and he was art directing and doing this and that. And he's like, yo, just help me with the photography part of it. And man, he took me on jobs and paid me well, and fucking I fucked up some of my first job with him. I totally fucked up. I loaded film the wrong way and all this shit.
Yeah.
But he salvaged it, man, and he had my back through it, and fucking we worked through all those kinks. And when I was in school, he introduced me to the people at ESPN. Big, big shout out to ESPN and Amy Lupo over at ESPN. She was like the first person that really gave me a job.
Uh-huh.
So she was like, you know, we got this X game thing going. She's like real high up for ESPN X games.
Yeah.
And just the one of the raddest people ever. And so she gave me this job as like a kid, I think making like, you know, damn near nothing. But at the time it was a lot for me. And I had the opportunity to shoot photos. So I started going to all the X Games. I went to the ones in LA. Then they started flying me the ones in Aspen. I started meeting the athletes and the personalities and slowly kind of getting my feet wet up in that industry. And, you know, Marcus was introducing me to everybody that he knew. And things just started going from there. One of my good friends was a television, I don't know his exact term. I'm going to slaughter it. But he's like involved in television production.
Yeah.
He does the instant replays. And he put me up on like a labor job for like television, where I'd run all the cables in and out of the stadium. So for like 2 years, you know, I was making like $250, like just being a like humping fucking camera gear and cables up and down stadiums in San Diego, sometimes some shit in LA or Orange County, and just setting up these things. But it would be like a busy month for me would be working like 6 to 10 days for $250. So I had a lot of downtime.
Uh-huh.
And in that time, I'd hustle any kind of photo gig I can get. As well as doing my little side hustle, hint, hint.
Yeah.
And
does that blossom into DC?
Well, so this is the crazy thing. Another crazy story, man. So I'm doing television production. I'm like, damn, I can't believe I'm doing this. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm a photographer, but hey, whatever. I got an in here, you know? And that's what a lot of people need to realize when they got that opportunity. When you get that in, it might be a direction you don't even consider yourself going, and you end up going that route because it's an in somewhere.
If you can get your foot in the door, then you can kick it open eventually.
Exactly. Yeah. In any way you want. So these guys, like, you know, they bust my balls all crazy. It's kind of like a construction mentality, and they were cool with me, but I worked hard. You know, I busted my ass and they respected me, and throughout about a year and a half, like everybody had mad respect for me. It was like, as soon as I was done with my job, I go help the guy doing audio. Hey, man, you want me to help you mic up the field?
Yeah.
Cool, I'll mic up the dugout. You do the field, whatever. And I just started learning other shit. And I was like really interested in directing. Like, so I'd go inside those television trucks with live TV and I would see this director like calling out fucking different monitors and the instant replay guys. And he was like running the show. He had like all the control, which I guess I come back to find out I'm like really a control freak. And so I'm watching this dude fucking doing all that. And I was like, wow, that'd be tight to be that. So about 2 years into it, at this Christmas party, the main dude kind of pulls me aside and is like, hey, man, like, you paid your dues. You're a good dude. If you want to start coming down, you know, and learning other shit, like, you're more than welcome to. And, like, at this point, I'm making consistent money with it, you know, and I got my other shit on the side, like I said. And so I was doing all right. So I'm at this Christmas party. My wife's down there. We're hanging out. And I kind of got, like, the, hey, man, someone's opened up the back door. You can come on in, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have an opportunity to learn anything you want.
Right.
Direction, photography, like, I'm not photography, but like shooting cameras or whatever. And I was like, okay, cool, man. And I was so excited about it on the way home. I'm telling my wife, like, damn, I can't believe, like, this is the direction my life is going. Because I thought it'd be photography. But, hey, I'm not going to look a different direction just because it's not what I want. Like, this is what's being presented to me.
Right, right.
And so I was like, man, I guess I'm going to start doing that. And crazy shit, dude. The next fucking day, no lie, the next day I get a call from Marcus Paulson, who's the guy that brought me into ESPN, saying, hey, I got a position for you at DC Shoes.
Yeah.
And when I looked at both of the things, I was actually probably making more money doing the television production and, you know, the side extracurricular shit than I was at what the salary he was offering me at DC. It was like a real shitty entry level position, but it put me with a camera again.
Yeah.
And it put me at a dope company where, you know, like you said, you know, you got your foot in the door. And so I talked it over to my wife. I'm like, damn, I'm gonna be making almost 10 G's less if I like go this route, but there was like health insurance, and because I had a kid and all that, it was like, well, I'm going to go this direction.
Yeah.
So I ended up getting a staff photography position at DC Shoes.
And the staff photography position was like the bottom of the totem pole. You're like shooting shoes on white background all day pretty much, right?
Yeah, like, that was it, man. It
production
was
like, level stuff.
Yeah, it was production. It was like we have a template. You put the shoe on the template.
Yeah.
You shoot it. You name it. And it goes into a catalog.
Which is the funniest thing is while we were in school, tabletop photography is what both of us had the most problems with, I would say. Like, tabletop photography is fucking hard. And the crazy shit is after you were doing production for like a year, I came down and visited the studio and you showed me like how you were doing everything. And a shot that would have taken me like 4 hours while we were in school, you were doing in 5 minutes. And I was going like, holy fuck, like how do you know how to do all of this with tabletop photography? And you're like, it's just what I do all day.
Yeah, and it literally was, man. You know, it was like DC put the 10,000 hours in me as far as like every little, I mean, I shot so many damn shoes, prepped so many damn shoes, shot them, you know. And the thing is like, man, if somebody gives you like a can of pee, like if someone gives you like fucking 50 words and they say rap that shit, only those 50 words for fucking 5 years straight, you're gonna get like real fucking creative on the ways to like rap, use the words, you know what I'm saying? And so it was like, dude,
deep analogy.
So I'm looking at a fucking shoe and then some art director dudes coming in like, well, we need it to look different. I'm like, dog, like it's a shoe.
Yeah.
And a shoe's like anything else. There's a sexy side and there's like a side you don't want to show, and then you know, the heel and the toe is kind of you know, you always want to show the lateral side or whatever. And so then it was just
very
learning.
Very similar to taking a dick pic.
You know, I've swiped left, Lee. He's like, yo, check this photo out. I'm like, oh, shit. That's what you'd be sending out on Tinder?
So how long were you how old was Nolan at this point when you get the DC job?
Nolan was probably, two or three.
And so around that time is when you found out that Nolan is a little different.
Yeah.
I started coming down when I would visit, and you know, the crazy thing was is that James Nocan, who's one of my other really great friends, he had a kid that was the same age as Nolan. Like, you guys have the same family except opposite. His are all girls, yours are all boys. So he had a two-year-old, and she was, like, talking and doing stuff, and then I would come down and visit you, and I would notice, like, Nolan was really quiet, and he wouldn't make a lot of eye contact.
Yeah.
And when did you guys start noticing that?
Man, you know what? I think we might have noticed it. There was, like, weird little things that would happen with him just randomly. Like, I want to say since he was about 1.5, you know? Yeah. But as a parent, you're kind of like, oh, he's just young. And,
yeah.
You know, we weren't around a lot of other kids at that time because, man,
you guys were young.
My 23-year-old homies, there wasn't one around that had a kid.
You were the only,
you know?
You were the kids that had kids. Like, that was
exactly.
Yeah.
So there wasn't a lot to compare it to. And, you know, my wife being, she had a degree in like child development and all that, was a teacher. And so I'm sure she was probably a little bit aware of it before me, but I think my wife kind of had like a little bit of a complex about it, maybe, you know. It's like a tough thing to accept.
Like, you don't want to admit it or something.
Yeah, like, oh, he's behind at something. And we actually had like a, what is the physician, the child doctor, pediatrician,
right,
that was like, oh, you guys are just tripping over that. Like, he's just a spoiled kid. You guys talk for him. So he doesn't, like, he's just blooming late, you know. And so we had all these questions, and then I'm like, man, like, he was doing like all kinds of different things that I'm like, that ain't normal, dude.
Yeah.
Like, one time, man, he had like fucking took all the Hot Wheels cars and he had lined them up in color by the make.
Oh, wow.
Like, he had all vans that were red here and then all trucks that were blue there. And like, had made this line that was like 15 feet long. Like I got in the shower, got out, and that shit was there, dude. It like, it was like some poltergeist shit. You know what I mean? Where I came out and was like, who did that?
Yeah.
Cause at this point he's like a year and a half old. And I'm thinking like, did someone come in my house and try to fuck with me? Like, and it was him, you know, and he had done it and he started doing it more frequently. And there was all these telltale signs, but basically what had happened is, you know, we ended up getting my son tested and he has autism.
Yeah.
He's autistic. And, yeah, we just started going through that. So that really put a fire under my ass to like,
work even harder.
Work even harder, really. Yeah. Just in general, what was happening at the beginning and, is, you know, we needed to get help.
Yeah.
We needed to figure out what was going on. And I think for like young parents, like we were getting a lot of doors shut in our face or people were just treating us like kids, you know? And it's like, man, I'm a smart dude. My wife's very smart and she's like a take no shit. Like you can't tell her no for anything. Yeah. I mean, you know, and, she'd be at work and she'd be trying to call somebody and she'd be on hold for like 2 fucking hours, dude. And these people wouldn't return our calls and nothing was happening and we weren't getting any kind of support and we weren't getting any kind of answers. And at that point, you know, I told her, I was like, we need to think about him, man. Like, regardless, he's number one. And like, we need to get what's going on with him straightened out.
Uh-huh.
And she was coming home crying every day. You know, she was bummed out because she couldn't get answers. And I just told her, I was like, you know what? Fuck your job. Like, you, I know you want to stay home. I know you want to figure this out. So fuck this job. Like, I'm going to make it work. I'm going to figure it out. Like, I'll figure it out how to make enough money to like support us all and mm-hmm. get this. You just worry about him. You get him taken care of. Cause you know, you have a background in this and it makes sense, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we made the decision and we did that, man. And you know, for about a year and a half, my wife just busted her ass, like trying to figure out a program for Nolan and getting him help, like getting therapies and working on his school stuff with him and getting like therapists. We actually have therapists since he was probably around like three or four to come to our house and work with us for hours at a time and work with him to.
Yeah. Cause what age do you think he said his first word at?
Well, the thing is he had a lot of words. He just had no sentences.
Like he couldn't lace them together at all.
Yeah. The putting the sentences together was like very hard for him.
Yeah.
And, so, you know, she just went off on this journey, man, trying to figure things out for him. And I remember like the first like school, like we had kind of went to that was doing the testing. It was just real crappy ass bitch that kind of did the testing. And it was crazy. Like, I don't feel like she liked Nolan, which seems to be crazy to say, but like at the same time, like my son's different to where like you have to be up for the challenge. Like he's, because he can't use vocabulary like other kids, he has a very heightened sensitivity for like things like eye contact or when you're talking to a kid, man, you know, if you know, just a pointer, if you're trying to talk to a kid, you're going to want to like, if you kind of get down on their level, like you, let's just say you drop to your knees and you're talking to a kid, you know what I'm saying? Now you're eye level with the kid and the kid's not looking up at you. That's a, you know, now you're not so intimidated.
Yeah. It's like a sign of submission almost, like I'm not a danger.
Yeah. And my son was like very aware of that kind of shit. And, he responded well to just different people. And some people did it instinctively. Some people were just those types of people and some people had to learn it. And she was real crazy. And we asked her about our options and it went from like, I want to know from 0 to 10. Like, I want to know like, okay, what's the, like the parents that don't give a fuck, like what happens with them and their kids to the parents that are Jenny McCarthy that got like fucking millions of dollars and could, you know, afford any types of therapies. I want to know everything and everything in between. And then me and my wife will pick where we fit in based on our finances and our life, you know?
Right.
And she's like, well, there isn't that many options. Like, that's literally what she said. And I was like, red flag.
Yeah.
Like, you fucked up. Like,
well, yeah, because I remember my mom would come down and be like, oh, I deal with this every day. You can do this, 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 and this. Talk to your teachers about this. And like, there's probably state laws that say this. And yeah.
So we got in the car, man, after that. And like, Kristen started crying and was like all freaking out. And I was like, man, fuck that lady. Did you hear what she said? Like, no options. Like, that's crazy. Like, there's options for everything, you know? And I said, man, she said that shit to the wrong people. Like, we're like 3 generations deep. Like, one of my good fucking homeboys, his dad was the mayor.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I'm going to get to the bottom of this shit. Like, we're going to figure it out and get what we want. And my wife just took that and, you know, hustled to getting him pretty much like the best care you could possibly have.
Yeah.
And he's killing it.
It's been so crazy to watch him grow up because, like, yeah, it was like this, I don't know, like,
being around him since the day he was born and just seeing to the kid that he's becoming now is such a drastic change. But also it's like it's a growth. It's been a big growth for me as a person too, because there is like this awkwardness when you see him, when you meet him and he's like three and you're like, oh, this kid like should, like when I call him, he should come and hang out with me and like me. And it's like, he's like, nah, I like, he's in his own world. It's like almost this thing like, oh, how do I deal with this? Like, how am I supposed to act?
It's intimidating.
And now it's like, dude, you know, when Nolan comes over and like recognizes me and says, hey, oh, I love you, Uncle Lee. Like that shit is so awesome. But also his artwork and like just, you know, the fact that he's starting to become more and more verbal. It's like just so crazy to watch. I don't know.
Yeah, man, I'm very, very proud of him, man. He's just such an awesome kid. And like, man, I will say, like, he truthfully is like a big inspiration for me, because he works so hard
just to do things that we take for granted.
Do shit, man, that you try to take it, you know, yeah, you definitely take for granted. And for me to see that, it's like, man, like, I'm telling you, this kid goes to school, he goes to a normal school, he has an aide, you know, who walks around with him and helps him with certain things, and he does normal classwork that all the other kids do at his age level. Then he comes home and three times a week he gets therapy. So as soon as he gets home, he works for another 2 to 3 hours with a therapist and me and my wife and the other kids, to where it's like, man, you know, like, damn, that is crazy. You know, then he has to do homework. Like, I mean, he's a very busy, hardworking kid. And, you know, there's so many different ways and spins you could put on it and different emotions that you go through, where I saw my wife was very emotional about it. That's her baby. And I kind of went the opposite, where I was like, whoa, we need to figure out what we need to do. Bang, bang, bang. And just like get it all checked off and make sure he's taken care of. And there's a lot of people, I think, that just like can't deal with it, or they don't accept it right. And the thing is if you do that, it's just, you're going to have to wait that much longer.
Yeah.
To start helping your kid.
Yeah.
You know, you need to intervene real quick and get over all that bullshit, because it's like, you may be like, oh, why is it me, or this, that, whatever. Oh, man, I wish my son could do this and that. And I remember like a key moment. He was going to this school. It was like a specialized school where it had typical children and then it had kids with disabilities, and they would intermix them. And it was this rad school where a lot of typical kids were trying to get in because there was like a speech therapist, a language, someone there that was there for like helping them with language, educational, a teacher. There was like all these different occupational therapists. There's like six people in the class. And we got them into this program. So there'd be like three typical kids and like three kids with disabilities, varied at different levels. And so we saw a lot of different shit there, you know? And it was like one day, I remember Kristen was kind of being down and out on like, just, you know, fuck, this is our life and we have to deal with this. And if you see my son, man, he's a handsome dude, like strong kid, athletic. Everything I really wanted for a son, when I thought like, damn, if my first kid's a boy, I'd be so stoked and this is what I'd want, you know? And he's everything, you know, that we'd want like that. And I remember we pulled up into the parking lot and there was this van next to us, and the van back opens up and this full on like lift comes out. And it's this kid on a wheelchair that literally has like one of those things where it's like he presses with his tongue the wheelchair. He's like straight paralyzed. And he had like, it looks like a lot of other shit going on. And the parents got out, and I just looked over at Kristen and was like, yo, like, this shit is always worse. There's always something that could be worse. And like, man, you have a kid that's athletic, handsome, all this shit. Like, look at what those parents are dealing with. Like, suck up them tears and let's just get this shit going. You know, like, let's figure out how we can help him and what we can do. Like, feeling sorry for us or him ain't gonna do shit. There's somebody else that got it worse.
Right.
And so, yeah, we've been on that journey, and like, it's cool, man. It's like really, it's really cool when he can accomplish all these different things, and from skateboarding to surfing to him doing his art.
Yeah.
I feel like that's definitely something we should talk about, because that's like a, not to get too far on this, but, yeah, Lee was like one of the first people that started realizing his like art. And,
well, 'cause he does stimming, like stimulation stuff, where he was doing stuff where he was drawing obsessively dots, on graph paper.
Yeah. Like, my mother-in-law would bring home some graph paper, 'cause she worked out of school and we had like these fat stacks of it. And, all one summer he just started taking these markers that were around the house, and he was drawing dots, like dots all inside of these graph paper. And I didn't pay much attention. I just knew he liked to do it, and it wasn't like odd for me. So I saw him doing it all the time. And then, like, you know, I'd say like by the end of the summer, Lee comes down and he's like, yo, what the fuck are all these pieces of paper of these dots like all over your house? Like they're everywhere. There's like stacks everywhere, like, you know, crazy stacks of shit everywhere. And I was like, oh, that's Nolan. He just likes doing that. He's like, well, this is fucking tight. Like, these are really cool. Like, you know, do you mind if I put it on Instagram? At that point in time, I didn't even have fucking social media. I was like, yeah, I'm not on that Facebook or fucking none of that kind of shit. And he put it on there and it just got mad love. Like a lot of people fucking started talking about it.
Yeah. Oh, use this as an album cover. It's so beautiful. Da 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 da. Cause to me, the way that you guys described it to me, I hadn't seen him actually do it yet. You were like, nah, dude, it's crazy. Like he'll get a bucket of markers and he'll sit there and he'll pick out a color. And if that color's not right, he puts it back as if he's looking for a specific color for each dot. And he doesn't fill them in with any rhyme or reason. He's not going straight right to left, yada, yada, yada. And I just thought it was so interesting. And I was like, this is not some random occurrence. Like this is this fool's art, you know, like this is art for real.
Yeah. And,
I don't know.
So once he did it, you know, I kind of put it out there and I had like, I ended up, you know, after I got on the social media,
I said, dude, you should put this on canvases.
Yeah. So we ended up, my dad, started building canvases for him and I started buying canvases. My mother-in-law, everybody was buying him a canvas and putting it at our house. And he started doing shit all over canvases. So now we got canvases all over the house. And me and Lee been talking about doing an art show with him for probably like 3 years now. I think we just got to get up off our ass and do that.
Well, and then years later, I read this book called The Reason I Jump. And I've been telling you and Kristen about it. And I just found this note. That's why I was digging in my phone. Because I thought this was so interesting. When I read it, I instantly thought about his art and I like this, all the hairs on my neck stood up. So it's The Reason I Jump is a book that's written, transcribed by a kid that, is a Japanese kid that has autism and he's trying to explain, how he feels because he can't verbally express himself, but he's able to write very, prolifically and very clear mindedly. And so he goes, so I do understand things, but my way of remembering them works differently from everyone else's. I imagine a normal person's memory is arranged continuously like a line. My memory, however, is more like a pool of dots. I'm always picking up these dots by asking questions so I can arrive back at the memory that the dots represent. And so when I read that, I was like, holy shit, like fucking, I wonder if that's what Nolan is doing, is trying to like paint his memories or something. And it was just, I don't know. That was like a really fucking cool moment for me.
Yeah, there's so many different, interpretations of like what he could be doing or whatever, but it is very interesting and it definitely makes you think that it's not just random and that it's, you know, that there may be a deeper meaning to it or whatever. And hopefully one day, man, it'd be cool if he just tells us why he liked to he likes to do it, because now he just says he likes it, you know. Like I like doing it. So we for anything that we like, this is the thing, man, for any parent or anybody out there like that's around a kid and just wants to expand like their creativity or their thought process or anything, man, you got to just be very aware of like what people are doing and what they like, and then just provide a bigger venue for them.
Yeah.
Cause that's all I really see it is. It's like, you know, me being a photographer, marketing dude, whatever. It's like literally, man, like, you know, dudes like me and Lee can turn you into whatever you want to be. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like we could take photos of you that make you look cool and tell you what to do and how to post on your social media or this, that, whatever, and kind of turn you into something. And I've seen that, you know, with my kid where I'm like, hey, you know what? Like, you know, I could market my son, you know, with this art shit or whatever, and help him out and give him this venue to show people, whether it's just social media. Or I had friends hit me up that own skateboard companies that are like, yo, we should do a like an autism deck for the month of, you know, autism month, and, you know, just all kinds of cool opportunities like popped up in the connections I have with like various companies to be like, hey, let's do a shoe for Vans or let's do this or that, you know, could be cool opportunities. And I think just seeing these things that your kids are into, before it was art, like my son, he's just like was fidgety when he was young and like he liked to jump, right? And like he liked to jump and he liked to hang and climb. So he would like climb fucking bookshelves, like all kinds of shit that was like inappropriate to climb. You know what I mean? And the thing is like when somebody climbs some shit, like, or somebody's jumping or somebody's doing something and you see and you're like, why the fuck are they doing that? And it's like, they just might need to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you may not understand it and it may not be appropriate to fucking jump up and down in the middle of your classroom or at work. But the thing is like, I started asking my son like, hey man, do you need to jump? And he would go, yeah. And I would say, well, I need to buy you a trampoline then.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's as simple as that, where like some parents will scold their kids like, what the fuck are you doing? Stop jumping. Like, yeah, you're annoying me. Or like, you're upstairs on the second floor and you're jumping all crazy and it's, you know, it's knocking shit off the wall. Like, you just have to realize that kids may need to do that shit. So right, it's like, you know, I take them, you know, if your kid breaks into the garage and grabs spray paint, spray paints the side of your fucking car, like, he might want to fuck around with spray paint.
Yeah.
Go buy a piece of wood at fucking Home Depot and put it up in your background. Like, it's not appropriate to spray paint on the car.
Yeah.
But it is appropriate to do it somewhere else.
In a positive influence. Yeah. I don't know. This is like kind of off topic, but in the same vein, I find it funny and I draw parallels between what you go through with Nolan and then what's been happening with my dad as far as like out in public shit, because it's like we both know and love Nolan and I know and love my dad, and when we go out, people that don't understand, they both outwardly look extremely normal. Like you said, Nolan is a normal looking handsome kid, dresses super tight, like and has good haircut and everything. And when, like, I remember getting really kind of pissed one time when we were at SeaWorld or something, because he was going to go get on a ride and the guy went to like, was like, oh, okay, yeah, stand here. And like Nolan just kind of walked past him, and the guy was like, okay. And like kind of like snapped on him. And I wanted to be like, hey, motherfucker, like chill out. He just doesn't understand, you know?
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with my dad, where like he looks very outwardly normal, like a normal 60-year-old dude. But like, you know, if I go to a restaurant with him and I have to order his food because he can't remember what he saw on the menu, like, waitresses will kind of look up on me like, oh, you're kind of bossy, huh? Are you like the boss of the table? And I want to be like, hey, look, bitch, like the motherfucker has Alzheimer's and he can't remember. Like, I'm trying to do my dad a solid, like, don't be an asshole.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Well, I mean, you know, there's so many different levels of dealing with it. It's like, personally, you know, you have some personal guilt, like, oh shit, man, was it,
yeah,
like, did I do too much ecstasy? And that's, you know what I mean? Like, you're like, you don't know, like, did I smoke too much weed? Yeah, like, should, yeah, I have not done this? Like, did I do something to, yeah, like, you know, have my kid go through this? Or did I not do something? Or, you know, there's all these different little things you go through. And then, you know, when he's here, like, you're right. Like, you're in public. And I feel like, if it, you know, out of this whole autism talk, which may be over most of your fucking viewers' heads, and no one gives a shit about this or whatever.
People are interested in whatever.
The thing is, I'm going to tell you, man, is just like, if anybody could take anything from this whole babble conversation that we're having, is that fucking, man, just, you know, you don't ever know what the next motherfucker is going through, hands down, right, whether he has a, you know, whether he has Alzheimer's or he's got autism, or whether he's just a different motherfucker that, yeah, doesn't fit in, you know. And that's been something, man. I've never been like the type of motherfucker to pick on the little dorky kid or anybody, because you know, that's just not me, man. You get no glory in that. It's like, you don't get no glory in fucking picking on some kid that can't defend himself, yeah, or whatever. And the thing is like, you just never know what that next person's going through. Yeah. You never even know what the fuck someone has going on in their day if they're totally normal. So it's like, you know, for my son, one of the biggest things that was hard for me in the beginning, especially because I'm not like the type that have that shit, was like, I wanted to fucking fight everybody that looked sideways at my son, because, yeah, it was like, he couldn't control himself. Like I said, he'd be jumping up and down. He'd get in a restaurant and he would start jumping the fuck up and down. And it was like, you know, and I'm trying to calm him down. And because we're young, people would look at me and my wife, who probably, you know, looks fucking 10 years younger than me. It's like, oh, look at this fucking white trash looking dude with tattoos and his young dumbass wife. Like, they got some kid over here and they can't even control him, which is like, dude, I'm like a hyper parent compared to most. I feel like most of a lot of other parents.
Yeah.
We have to work twice as hard to work with him.
Well, and you also, because of the career and lifestyle, you get to be more involved in your kid's life than I think a lot of parents ever have the opportunity to be.
Right. Yeah. We're definitely blessed in that way, man. But I'm saying, like, these people would see Nolan and he would say something weird or do something weird,
and there's these, they'd roll their looks, eyes,
and, yeah, you know, or some people would even say some shit, you know?
Yeah.
And in the beginning, you know, it's like, I want to be like, motherfucker, he has autism, you fucking piece of, yeah, shit, you know what I mean? And then it got to a point where I'm like, you know what? Like, you're an adult, man. People are different. I don't know everybody an explanation.
Yeah.
You know, my kid's doing what he's doing because that's what the fuck he does, and it's none of your business. You, yeah, know what I'm saying? Like,
well, and I think I think you saying, like, you don't know what somebody else is going through, and don't be a bully, don't be an asshole, all ties back into, like, being able to talk to whoever and hold a conversation with whoever, because I think that you start each day in a non-judgmental headspace, and I think that's why you're able to kind of like succeed and people want to be around you, because
you're a dude who might have like one outward perception that is able to kind of like break whatever stereotypes your outward perception might have and be like a very fucking sweet, normal dude who can relate to anyone. And so that all ties into fucking the success theme that we've been talking about. And we didn't get nearly as far as I wanted to because we went on so many tangents, but we've already been talking for probably an hour and 45 minutes. So I'm going to say, like, after you got to DC, you started clicking up with like some art director guys and you guys started succeeding, and then it all just stemmed from there, right?
Yeah, man.
We got to wrap it up fast. So give me a summary of the last 5 years.
Woo, we didn't even get to the 5 years. I think I started my own business. Shout out to my own business.
Yeah. I think that a lot of it goes to you worked hard at DC. You kept your nose to the fucking grindstone. When opportunities arose, you took advantage of them, and you forged strong relationships with dudes that were at the same level as you in different positions, right? And you guys have been able to maintain those relationships throughout as everybody becomes independent business owners.
Yeah, man. Like I said, I started my own business. Some of the people that I worked with, they started their own businesses too. 9-5, yeah. Been a big supporter of everything I do since day one, and the owners over there, and been super cool. And then just all these people that we've worked with through times just continue to support. You know, they're like, Dom got his own business and they're working for New Era. So yeah, let's hire Dom. Now Dom works for New Era. Oh, they're going to REI. Like, you know, it's just people networking and good relationships. Yep. And I think what really at the end of the day, what it comes down to is the good relationships.
Yeah.
You know, photo work is photo work. There's a lot of people that do what I do, but at the same time, like, we got that good relationship.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Like, no matter what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think over the years, I'm so glad that we've been able to maintain our strong friendship and relationship. And that, I don't know if I've probably talked about this before, but like during my darkest days when Knox City was ending and I thought that I had wasted a year of my life and had nowhere to go and I was broke as shit and my unemployment ran out, this was the guy that I made one phone call to. And I said, hey man, I'm in kind of a bind. Do you need any work? Or do you have any work? And he said, you know what? I'm going freelance and I'm starting my own business and I need an assistant. So what's up? And that was 3 years ago and we've been going strong. And I think ever since then, every year the business has grown more, and he's helped set an environment for me to where I'm able to do these things and also concentrate on my own personal creativity, all while helping the business together grow. So very, yeah. Very proud of what we've accomplished and happy to have you in my life. No homo. So
you could sum that up. All by, like, you know that time when I leave once a month to hustle and pay the rent? This is the motherfucker I do it with.
That's who I do it with, exactly. So anyway, thank you guys for listening. Where can they find you online? On Instagram, at
yeah,
Dominic Cooley.
I was like worried. I'm like, yo, don't shout out my Twitter. It sucks, dude. I'm like, hey, just look at my Instagram, man, and you could see what's up. But yeah. If you like some real life shit, you could check out mine. But if not, fucking follow Van Styles or some shit.
At Dominic Cooley, DominicCooley.
Hell,
and
yeah.
You will see our adventures traveling and his three beautiful kids that are my nephews. Shout out to Nolan, Gavin, and Devin the Dude. And yeah, I don't know. My name's Lee. You guys might know me as Intuition. You can follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition. You can follow my man Ben Shin behind the boards, making the shit sound buttery, at I Am Database, space with two S's. Follow us as a unit at That's Kinda Neat, youtube.com/That's Kinda Neat, facebook.com/Kinda Neat. No one listens to this part, but download the iPhone app for podcasts, subscribe to Kinda Neat, leave a comment, leave a 5-star rating, everything wrapped up in a pretty package at kindaneat.net. That was my best friend and travel partner and fucking photo guru, Dominic Cooley. And that was kind of neat. Thanks, dude.